Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
We cannot subordinate the number one political party by electoral support to political parties that received less votes than the African National Congress.
The South African Communist Party says it is against any coalition government, including the ANC and opposition parties such as the Democratic Alliance and the Nkonto Wesizwe Party.
No, because you see, what happened was that the opposition argued that or predicted that he was going to talk about the things which he has already said. So there's no value addition in terms of attending the meeting.
Ugandan opposition groups boycott President Yoweri Museveni's State of the Nation address.
So what the strike action achieved is the fact that government came back to the negotiating table with speed this time around compared to the last time that they were lackadaisical and indifferent about whether we should meet.
And Nigerian trade unions suspend their strike action. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The South African Communist Party, or SACP, says it is sharply against any coalition government between the African National Congress, or ANC, and opposition parties such as the Democratic Alliance, the DA, and the newly formed Nkonto Wesizwe Party, or MK Party, led by former President Jacob Zuma. The SACP, which did not participate in the May 29 national elections, is an alliance partner of the ANC. The party says it is against any coalition with the DA because the opposition party received support from, quote, Western forces during the polls. It also contends that since former President Zuma's administration was tainted with allegations of state capture and graft, the ANC should not be seen as forming an alliance with the MK party. The party's position was communicated to South Africans at a press conference on Wednesday. It says the SACP will insist on accountability and on interest of the people. For more on the stance of the ANC coalition partner, I reach Alex Mashelu. He is the national spokesperson for the South African Communist Party.
The major point is that the African National Congress remains South Africa's largest political party by electoral support. Now, this is the will of the people. We cannot subordinate the number one political party by electoral support to political parties that received less votes than the African National Congress. We were part of the ANC's election campaign machinery. We wish to extend our sincere gratitude to the South Africans who have listened to us and voted for the African National Congress. And to those who did not vote, we wish to say to them, there is no neutrality in class struggle. Not voting can impact negatively on you. So in future, please stand up, go and exercise your democratic right to vote. We fought for it in South Africa, particularly as the black majority who were oppressed for over 300 years from 1652 to 1994.
South African Communist Party says it will actively pursue an outcome without the Democratic Alliance and without the Nkonto Wesizwe Party in a coalition negotiation process in the ANC Alliance and through public campaigning. Why?
This is the reason. The Democratic Alliance is arrogant. The South African economy is not transformed. If you look at ownership patterns, it is the white bourgeoisie who control the economy of South Africa. And when you trace the origin of their control, it comes from the era of colonial and apartheid oppression of the majority. The Democratic Alliance is the voice of the forces who control the economy, who do not want to share, who do not want the economy to transform, to accommodate ownership by the majority who were deprived. And the Democratic Alliance is a neoliberal party. There is just nothing in common between what we stood for in the campaign and what the Democratic Alliance stands for. Regarding the MK party, you will know that its roots can be traced back to the era of state capture in our country. The SACP was the first political party to expose the existence of corporate state capture, among others by the family of the Guptas. So the money that our economy lost due to the corruption and fraud of state capture benefiting the looters, including multinational corporations from the United States and Germany, is the root of the origins of the MK party. Because the MK party was formed by people who opposed accountability.
Alex, the question is, the SACP did not participate in the election. So what I have heard South Africans say is, what does this concern you, since you did not participate in the election and you do not have any mandate at all to tell the ANC what to do or what not to do in terms of trying to form a coalition government, negotiating with all political parties?
Now, when you talk about the ANC and the Communist Party, you are talking about alliance partners. This is why you have the leaders of the SACP on the ANC list. So we have a common alliance electoral strategy and platform led by the African National Congress to avoid us dividing our strength on the ground. So the campaign that was led by the ANC is a Communist Party campaign as an ally of the African National Congress. It is a campaign of the Congress of South African Trade Unions, which is also part of the alliance. It is an alliance campaign rather than an individual ANC organizational campaign. This is why the outcomes concern us, because we are part. Our MPs as the Communist Party will be in parliament and voting as well.
Does the party really mean you will go on a campaign against the ANC if it really goes ahead with negotiations with the Nkonto Wesizwe Party or the Democratic Alliance? Is this even realistic?
According to our program, which we adopted in 2022 July, which program assessed the electoral terrain of South Africa and concluded that there was the possibility of the ANC dropping below 50%. We noticed that this impact on the workers, which was negative, may influence other workers not to vote for the African National Congress, and that may reduce the ANC's votes. The MKP was imagining as a faction dividing the African National Congress. We were aware that if they stood for elections, they could take some votes from the African National Congress. Indeed, that is what has happened.
Alex Mashello is the national spokesperson for the South African Communist Party. He spoke with me from Johannesburg, South Africa. In Zambia, the executive director of the Southern African Network Against Corruption, or SANAC, is calling for transparency and accountability in the fight against graft and wrongdoing. Gregory Chifiri also says citizens have a major role to play in supporting the government fight against corruption in public institutions. His remarks come after President Hakainde Hichilema said his administration plans to establish a tribunal to investigate the acquisition and expenditure of development loans. The move, some observers say, will enable the government to recover resources stolen by previous public officials. SANAC's executive director Gregory Chifiri tells me that the fight against graft and financial malfeasance must be holistic, inclusive, transparent, and without political interference.
We have always supported and urged the government to put more effort in the fight against corruption, because in our considered view as an organization, we feel that corruption has been the biggest problem that Zambia has ever had. It's not that we don't have resources. It's not that we don't have good brains in the civil service. So when we hear initiatives such as tribunals to probe how things like loans were acquired and utilized, we feel that if we took such a direction, we'll be able to get to the root cause of what causes resources being diverted. And not only going to know what caused that, but also setting precedents for the future, so that those that handle resources will be careful not to fall into what others fell into. And we're also expecting that the president will extend tribunals or investigations into other areas such as the trade in Mukula and so on and so forth. Because corruption must be fought holistically, as looking at what happened in the past, what's happening now, and also creating an environment to prevent what should happen in future.
How does the government ensure transparency and accountability?
Well, if the tribunal is going to bear results, it should be bereft of political connotations. It should not be targeted at individuals, but be targeted at a cause. For example, if those that are found wanting are perhaps connected to the government must follow them and tell us what is happening. But if it is going to target individuals, then it is going to be a sheer waste of time. And for it to be meaningful, it should cut across sectors. It should involve the church, civil society, the judiciary, and all the stakeholders, including parliament itself, members of parliament from the opposition. It should not be a tribunal that is perhaps heavily maybe comprising maybe heavily of members of the ruling party. It should find a way of making it an all-inclusive tribunal.
There are some worries that based on pronouncements made by certain public officials, the tribunal will appear to be targeting specific opponents or critics of the administration and will lack the transparency or be duly influenced by political persuasions to go after perceived political opponents or enemies of the administration.
Well, I wouldn't want to say that the proponent of that school of thought are wrong. Perhaps it's coming from a historical perspective, because in the past we have seen tribunals perhaps maybe set up to maybe fix certain opponents. But maybe we give it a bit of doubt in the now that we ask before the tribunals are set up. We ask government to engage the citizenry, and also as citizens of the country, we also make proposals to how we would want this to be. But let's not throw the baby with the bathwater. Let's give it a benefit of doubt. And if it doesn't work out to the expectations of the people, I think now people have got more of a say than before to judge. The people of Zambia are the best judges themselves, and they know when to pronounce their judgment, and they do it at the most cardinal time. And this also should serve as a warning to the government to say that they should not set up tribunals that will seemingly be used to fight political battles, but tribunals that are going to benefit the people, because tomorrow they will be on the other side themselves.
Gregory Chifire is the executive director of the Southern African Network Against Corruption. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
Hi there, this is Larry London, your host of Border Crossings, heard weekdays at 1500 Universal. We normally play requests and dedications, but on Tuesdays we bring you a special, a music feature, the Spotlight Featured Artist of the Week. And every week it's a different artist. On a Tuesday, Bella Rios joins us this coming up Tuesday. Tune in at 1500 Universal. This is Border Crossings, and we are on the Voice of America.
Malawi media and human rights watchdogs say that despite making strides 3 years ago to repeal some laws which infringed on media freedom, the country is still witnessing growing levels of threats and arrests of journalists. As the country prepares for next year's general election, many journalists fear a crackdown on freedom of press. For VOA, Jamal Prince Jamal reports from the Malawian capital, Lilongwe.
In 2020, a few months after assuming power, the current administration won itself proudest for repealing some laws that threatened and diminished the country's media landscape. The new government further implemented the Access to Information Act, ATI, which became a law in 2017. Yet for the past 2 years, journalists have cried foul over persistent threats and arrests targeting them. According to Media Institute of Southern Africa, MISA, Malawi chapter, three journalists have already been arrested in 2024, while in 2023, about 10 journalists were either arrested or attacked in the course of duty.
We're concerned by the level of, like I've said, intimidation of journalists and the level of threat that are being issued to journalists, especially as we run up to the elections.
In April 2022, police detained Grigory Gondwe, an investigative journalist from Platform for Investigative Journalism, allegedly in an attempt to force him to disclose his sources for one of his reports. Malawi Human Rights Commission told VOA. The report focused on allegations that the Malawi government was doing business with the UK-based businessman Zuneth Sattar, who is under investigation in the UK for alleged corrupt practices involving public officers in Malawi. Sattar has consistently denied any wrongdoing. According to Malawi Human Rights Commission, Gondwe fled the country in February after receiving threats from Malawi Defense Force to have him arrested over his article. But the Public Relations Office at the Malawi Defense Force declined to comment on the allegation when contacted by VOA.
There are also people that would want their interests not to be brought to light. The things that they would want to hide, and journalists are busy digging this up to bolster our democracy. And because of that, we are seeing increasing threats, especially towards investigative journalists.
Malawi Human Rights Commission, while acknowledging the strides the current administration has made in repealing some of the laws which negatively impacted on the work of journalists, said the current state of media freedom in the country is a cause for worry as preparations for next year's elections take shape.
It's quite concerning. On the other hand, really good that we have laws in place that journalists or citizens can use to exercise their freedoms, freedom of expression, media freedom. But on the other hand, we're also seeing that there's use of the state system or institutions to kind of also limit the same freedoms that we have been given through the laws.
While preparations for the September 2025 general elections are gaining momentum, human rights and media bodies in the country feel that the working environment for journalists is very hostile and hinders their ability to better inform the public.
Now we're going towards the election. The media is very critical in any election, as you may imagine. Now already we are seeing this kind of trend where journalists somehow are being threatened and their work is not fully guaranteed that they will be safe. The fact that a journalist has to flee the country for his own safety is quite worrying.
Media Council of Malawi, the country's regulatory body for professional journalists, observes that the current atmosphere in the country is limiting media practitioners from fully discharging their watchdog role.
We are going into an election period. There will definitely have to be a lot to be exposed so that we help people, Malawians, to make right choices. But if this continues, it means now they are suppressing the media so that their interests, their agenda can be promoted. And that puts the whole scenario of the governance system of Malawi at risk.
Moses Kunkuyu, Malawi's Minister of Information and Digitization, declined to grant an interview to VOA. However, in a written response, Kunkuyu dismissed fears of any possible crackdown on press freedom in the country. He said the government was committed to ensure safety and freedom for journalists. He cited implementation of Access to Information Act of 2020 as an indication of their commitment to ensure that journalists and the general public are free to access information from public institutions without any hassles.
It's supposed to make it easier for us to access information, but that is not the case because the law had expected that the government departments and agencies would proactively disclose information, but that is not the case.
Freedom of press is provided for in the country's constitution, but unless public officers who are custodians of information in Malawi's public institutions respect this provision, the Human Rights Commission feels there's a likelihood that cases like those of Grigory Gondwe and other journalists who are working against all odds to expose corruption and other social ills in the country will rise between now and 2025 when the country goes to the polls. Jamal Prince Jamal, VOA News, Lilongwe.
In Uganda, opposition groups boycotted President Yoweri Museveni's State of the Nation address. This after claiming the president has nothing new to say after staying in power for nearly four decades. In his speech, the president renewed his call for war on corruption, but critics say the opposition missed an opportunity to respond in real time to the president, which they contend could have given them political mileage and support. They also say the recent Western sanctions imposed on top officials over graft allegations appear to have put the government's fight on financial malfeasance under the international spotlight. For analysis and more reaction, I reach Philip Kasaija. He is a political science professor at Makerere University.
Well, you talked about many things, but fighting corruption, renewing the fight against corruption, I think that was one of the major messages that he delivered. Of course, the other one is the usual things about Uganda entering the lower mid-income status, among all the other things that he talked about, yes.
Was there a wasted opportunity for the opposition to react to some of the statements he made because they refused to be part, you know, to listen to his speech?
No, because you see, what happened was that the opposition argued that or predicted that he was going to talk about the things which he has already said. So there's no value addition in terms of attending the meeting. And that's why the opposition stayed away. Because of this feeling that there is nothing new that he's going to deliver. Whether he proved the opposition right or wrong is anybody's guess. But all I can say is that that's an argument which the opposition has consistently been advancing. That the man has nothing new to offer.
What about the issue of corruption? Because recently the president declared war on corruption when he attended a ceremony last week at the National Defense College. He has also written to authorities in the UK to provide evidence of corruption against the Speaker of the National House of Assembly or Parliament, Anita Among, among other officials. Isn't this part of a renewed effort, as some people would say, to fight corruption in Uganda?
Well, I did attend the function where he declared or renewed his call to fight corruption last Saturday at the National Defense College. But I don't know. The problem has been all talk without action. Because this is not the first time that he's renewing the war against corruption. I remember a couple of years back, he even led a walk in the streets of Kampala against corruption. So I don't know whether this is a new way or he has found a new way of fighting corruption. But from what he was talking about yesterday, that he's discovering certain things for the first time. For example, yesterday he was talking about that he has learned with evidence that the Minister of Finance, people are conniving with the parliament to steal government money. So yes, there is a renewal to fight corruption, but I'm not so sure whether that is going to pass.
So what do they think is the best way to handle this issue of corruption? Because opposition is talking about corruption. The government is talking about the fight against corruption. Civil society groups, Inspector General of Government is also talking about the fight against corruption and lifestyle audit among issues. Why isn't this being addressed in spite of the political will from all sides to address this challenge?
Yes, but you see, the thing is the corruption is a very pernicious kind of vice that it has a way of changing its color. And presumably that's why it has been difficult to fight corruption in public life in this country. Because it's always changing, it's always mutating, basically. So of course, the main culprits have been government officials stealing public funds. Now, whether we are now seeing a really new vigor or new vigor to fight for the vice, I don't know, yes. And I think also the foreign government imposing sanctions on these government officials who allegedly have put their hand in the till in the coffers of the state. I think presumably that also adds on the impetus of fighting this fight. Because at the end of the day, I think we all need hands on the deck to make sure that we eradicate this, to eradicate the fight. But so far, it has failed to go away.
So you think the recent sanctions due to corruption might have awakened government sensibilities about the need to intensify the fight against corruption in Uganda?
What has happened is that the sanctions on government officials, some government officials, what it has done is basically to concentrate the minds of the government to say, look, something has to be done about this whole vice. Otherwise, the country is going to collapse.
Philip Kasaija is a political science professor at Makerere University. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. The new Cameroonian parliament session is scheduled to begin on June 11. Lawmakers say the main issues to discuss include budget programming in preparation for the November budget session. Parliamentarians also plan to discuss next year's presidential election. It comes as the electoral body compiles a voter list to be used for the poll. Supporters of the ruling party want longtime President Paul Biya to contest. They contend that he is the best hope to continue with policies to improve living conditions, unite the country, and improve the country's infrastructure. Gladys Etombe Ekome is a leading Cameroonian lawmaker. I reached her to find out what her expectations are and what residents in her constituency want in the coming parliamentary session.
As a member of parliament, my expectations are geared towards making sure that the things that my constituency needs, some of them would get into the budget for next year. Because we have this session, we are going to be, it's like a programming session, looking into the things which the government have decided to put into the budget next year and making sure that everybody's constituency gets something.
What will you be pushing in parliament for this budget to encapsulate or capture what residents or your constituency wants or needs?
Well, roads. You see, I'm in a constituency which is, many people think is very blessed. Truly we are. But you see, we have just one road. We are enclaved, put it that way, because we have just one road leading into the main area of the constituency. And it's a very delicate issue, because in my constituency, the base, the military base, the B, is in my constituency. And looking at it closely, if there is a need for emergency exit, and that the one road we have has challenges, then nobody can go out or come in. We had a situation once when a trailer turned over with a gas oil. And of course, you know what that means. It we were stuck for hours. Nobody could come in. Nobody could go out of the main town.
But is it in the plan? Is it in the plan of the government to provide alternative routes?
Yes, it is in the plan of the government, and actually, the studies have been done. They are doing a lot in that direction, because they know the need for that second access into the town. So I believe that it's one of the main things that many of us in my constituency are looking up to.
So are you going to put pressure on government officials when they come in order to address this concern?
I don't want to say I would put pressure, because I would make the points clean and clear for everybody to see, so that everybody can understand, because everybody needs roads. And I don't expect that it's only for my constituency. In fact, we are really blessed. We just had the president just ask that a higher school, a teacher's training school, be opened in the University of Boya. Wonderful. We are happy about it. And we keep asking for more. But yes, we are. Yes, we are, Odiva Twist. We are asking for more.
Are you saying with population growth, the infrastructure cannot sustain the...
You see, with the situations that we are facing with the crisis, my constituency is one of those which has... the population has more than quadrupled. in a very short time. So a lot of the infrastructure cannot really carry the population growth that we are experiencing. It's like a population explosion that we are experiencing. And I want to thank the government a lot, because they are doing a lot to try to handle the population growth in the different main towns of my area.
Gladys Etombi Ekome is a leading Cameroonian parliamentarian. She spoke with me from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé. Still in Cameroon, presidents and finance ministers from 11 Central African countries have failed to agree on merging three economic blocs. For VOA Moki, Edwin Kenzeka reports from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
Analysts say breaking down economic barriers among member countries of the Central African Economic and Monetary Community, CEMAC, the Economic Community of Central African States, ECAS, and the Economic Community of the Great Lakes Countries, CEPGL, will boost trade and growth in a region that is said to be among the poorest and most conflict-ridden in the world. But after a meeting in Cameroon's capital, officials say combining the three economic blocs will take longer than the leaders of the regions expect. Gilberto de Piadade Virisimo is the president of ECAS.
C'est un processus assez long parce qu'il s'agit de regrouper.
He says the process of merging the economic blocs is taking longer than planned because of a lack of political will, conflicting interests, and bureaucratic duplication among three rival economic groups. He says each time there is a leadership change, ECAS officials start explaining the importance of fusing the economic blocs for the general interest of the 11 Central African states to new governments all over again, because different leaders have different understandings of the combination. Verissimo said merging economic blocs will stop the duplication of regional projects such as airlines, roads, electricity, agriculture, and aquaculture, making it easier for funding agencies to invest in such projects. ECAS consists of Cameroon, Chad, the Central African Republic, Gabon, Congo, Equatorial Guinea, Angola, Burundi, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Rwanda, and Sao Tome and Principe, and was created in 1983. It is officially recognized by the African Union as Central Africa's regional economic community. In 1999, Cameroon, Chad, Central African Republic, Gabon, Congo, and Equatorial Guinea launched CEMAC, but remained members of ECAS. In 2003, Burundi, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Rwanda created CEPGL, but also remained in ECAS. The three economic blocs claim that their mission is to facilitate the free movement of goods and persons across borders and promote regional integration, reduce inequality and poverty. But the African Union, or AU, says the Central African states remain among the poorest countries, although their economic and social potential is very strong. In 2006, the AU asked Central African leaders to merge the three economic blocs. Edouard Normand Bijindaka is the governor of the Bank of the Republic of Burundi. He says the participants in the Yaoundé meeting created an organization to examine a new currency to replace the West African CFA franc and the Central African CFA franc.
This high monetary authority will be in charge of preparing the different steps toward a free trade zone and then a common market. So that's the rationale of having a common currency. There is a number of steps that have to be put in place by member countries before we attain this particular objective.
Cameroon's Prime Minister Joseph John Goute represented President Paul Biya at the meeting.
L'objectif ultime de la rationalisation des communautés économiques régionales.
Goute says despite the challenges, committed leaders of the region will continue advocating for a strong regional economic community that will improve business, encourage the free movement of people, and reduce poverty. He says Central African states cannot continue to think that they can single-handedly solve their problems while other countries, including developed nations, are counting on economic blocs to tackle their problems. The AU says fusing the economic blocs will facilitate trade and growth among Central Africa's 240 million inhabitants and allow member states to concentrate on infrastructure development and jointly combating climate shocks, terrorism, and armed groups that are destabilizing the 11 countries. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
The Secretary General of Nigeria's Trade Union Congress, or TUC, says leaders of the group are hopeful President Bola Ahmed Tinubu will soon announce a new minimum wage for public sector workers. Nuhu Toro says the workers' unions decided to suspend their strike after representatives of the government agreed to negotiations to forward their demands to the president. The workers are demanding a minimum wage of $349 a month for public sector workers to help cushion the effects of the economic challenges facing the country. For more about the latest development, I reach Nuhu Toro.
The main issue that led to the strike, I mean, issue was payment of minimum wage and the electricity tariff in Nigeria. So what the strike action achieved is the fact that government came back to the negotiating table with speed this time around compared to the last time that they were lackadaisical and indifferent about whether we should meet or not. So in the course of the strike, there were discussions that with the government and employers in the private sector, which we were able to extract some commitment in the sense that we told them that we'll be giving them a time frame of 1 week within which to dispense with the issue of minimum wage, which they agreed. So the moment we extracted that commitment, there was no need to further the strike. Don't forget, strikes are a means to an end, not an end in itself. So we strike to draw attention to expedite action. At the moment we are able to get that, we suspend the strike. So, and you can see between the space of the 1 week, we've been able to dispense with the new minimum wage in Nigeria. While the government has employers,
are you satisfied? Are you satisfied?
We are satisfied with the outcome because invariably there were two reports forwarded to Mr. President. The government as employers and the private sector opted for 62,000 naira, 62,000 naira, while organized labor opted for 250,000 naira. So those are two reports that is forwarded to Mr. President for his amendment for further transmission to the National Assembly for legislative action.
But isn't the gap too wide?
Well, you see, it doesn't also stop on our desk. Now the president has the final say. The president has the prerogative to make or mar the entire figures. For instance, the president can say, okay, organized labor, let's take the 150,000. It's fine. We'll take it. So, and whatever he sends to the National Assembly is what will be promulgated at the end of the day into law. So we are hopeful. The president, knowing fully well what the people are going through, knowing fully well that there's hunger in the land, knowing fully well that the 30,000 minimum wage is already eroded, I mean, will not do anything to undermine the working people and their families.
Hope Ozodima, the governor of Imo State, came out with some leaders of the workers' union and say that they are satisfied with how things are going so far and that soon you'll come up with a unified voice. Is this the true reflection of the negotiations?
Well, I was also at the meeting. I was also at the meeting you alluded to where Ozodima made that assertion. What he said is that employers of labor and private sector proposed 62,000. while organized labor proposed 250,000. That was what Hope Uzodinma said, because apparently I was there when he made this assertion.
But are you not on the same page now? Is that soon you will agree on the best way forward?
We want to be optimistic, but the proposal has left our desk. So now the responsibility lies with Mr. President, who will go through, either accept, reject, amend, and forward to the Auditor General, not the National Assembly, for legislative action. So if they give us what we want, the 150, for instance, we'll gladly take it and go to sleep.
Nuhu Toro is the Secretary General of Nigeria's Trade Union Congress, or TUC. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Klote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs, and music from African Collection. But first, now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Last Thursday, the United Nations General Assembly met to elect 5 new non-permanent members to replace 5 others that will be departing at the beginning of January 2025. The vote was a secret ballot, and each candidate should have 2/3 majority. The result was that Denmark and Greece were elected from Europe. Pakistan was elected from Asia to replace Japan. Panama was to replace Ecuador from Latin America. And African vacancy resulting from the absence of one candidate will be filled by Somalia. This would mean that the non-permanent members of the council will still have full-scale African representation along with Guyana from the Caribbean. And we also have the case that Pakistan may align itself with the African delegation, as possibly Panama with them. So all in all, this is a very good group of non-aligned members, non-permanent members, that will be in the council as of January 2025. Somalia election was a high support of the improvements that have been made in Somalia. Somalia was last in the Security Council in 1972 and 73. At that time, Somalia was represented by a distinguished diplomat, Mr. Ambassador Farah. He distinguished himself so well in the council that he was asked to join the Secretariat and served illustriously until his retirement. It is also significant that the election of Somalia ran up a number of so-called failed states of 1980s and 1990s. The first of these so-called failed state was Liberia, that served in the Security Council 1997-1998. The next took a long time, that is Mozambique, which will end its membership this December. Mozambique had served for 1923 and now 1924. And the third so-called failed state had been Sierra Leone, who is now serving its first of 2 years and will continue until 2020. 25. So it's very good that Somalia, who was also called a so-called failed state, will begin its service in the Council in 2025. It is also important to note that Somalia will enter the Council with a real challenge. And the challenge is that the Security Council from time to time will be confronted with cases where they are calling on many countries to complete or start their democratic process. We have seen this in the case of Africa with the recent coups and the pressure on them by either ECOWAS, the African Union, or the Security Council that they proceed quickly to democratize their society. It will be very, very odd for Somalia to be in the Council without completing its democratic process, which means adult suffrage, free and fair election on a level playing field. So it would be advisable for Somalia to expedite this process in the remaining 6 months of the year, not only to fulfill its just acceptance in the Council, but to take into account that Puntland, one of the autonomous regions of Somalia, had given a warning few months ago that unless Somalia moves swiftly to democratize, it will have to reconsider its links with Somalia. So this is what will be the challenge for Somalia in the remaining months of this year. Other than that, Africa should rest assured that the team that they have now in the Security Council, which is Algeria, Sierra Leone, Mozambique, who is leaving, and of course the Caribbean delegate, Guyana, will be splendidly reinforced at the beginning of 2025 with Pakistan and with perhaps Panama representing Ecuador. What one can expect is the continuation of this African, Caribbean, now Asia group to continue with their splendid performance and steadiness. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect a flashback with music from the continent.
Yeah, I don't wanna hurt anymore. Moyo si mama when you call in my phone. Nikita Zama, oh no, I'm not alone. And I'm feeling at home, but my loving be so low. Daily be thinking about my Caribbean. Oh yeah, she part of me. It's not alarming me that we still building up this chemistry. So don't you mess with she. I got some angels in my love for this positivity. So don't you get up on my temper. I got some fire inside who and I'm next up. And you don't believe who. Catch me in a few years, few gears. Who hears your Allah and the man up in the mirror. So let me get a little bit of clearer. Can you see me? Nitizame kwenye kiyo. Unapendeza ukijistiri na mtandio milio. Mdani nitetizi kocho kwa.
Oh my temper, temper, temper.
You got my feelings, you hurt my feelings. Reason I don't really wanna stress no more.
You doubt my feelings, broke my heart, so I never really wanna see your face no more.
Cool my temper, out of my pressure. I love what you're feeling, cause I'm feeling vibration. Baby, motivation, that is my amper. So I need a fresh one, I really wanna step up. Baby, like you're feeling me. Baby, on your body, you go dancing me. Shady, who you feel like you're holding me. I don't wanna dance when I'm feeling me. If I find love, not anymore. Yeah, I don't wanna fight anymore.
Running for your life, might wanna start a war. Yeah, I don't wanna fuck anymore. Waste it all my time, but I waste no more. Yeah, I don't wanna fight anymore. Running for your life, might wanna make a war. And I'm not for
all my temper, 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 temper. Cool my temper, 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 temper. Cool my temper, 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 temper. Cool my temper.
Focus on what you need. It's a dream, then let it be. Happy. Happy. Happy.
Usiogope la wama. Usiogope la wama. Usiogope la wama, una chanzo hapa, una chanzo hapa, una chanzo hapa. Chukua tua ya kwanza, chukua tua ya kwanza. Usiogope la wama, usiogope la wama. Matumaini yanafuata, mabadiliko yanafuata. Matumaini yanafuata, mabadiliko yanafuata.
It's been a long ride, and I've learned some things. I know that no matter how hard you try, you can't clip by wings. No matter how harsh the cold, there will always be a spring. I know the bees buzz around and sometimes they sting, but how can a pebble burn down a king? And I don't know what the future will bring. That's why I look so sorry when I'm always in.
Una chanzo hapa, una chanzo hapa. Chukua tua ya kwanza, chukua tua ya kwanza. Usiogope la wama, usiogope la wama. Matumaini yanafuata, mabadiliko yanafuata. Matumaini yanafuata, mabadiliko yanafuata.
Oh yeah, and she came with a new type game. Seeking the fame, no, it ain't that game. But boy, she know how to shake that thing. How to reach that thing. Gotta play that string. I play that music when the night falls. Play the record that we reckon will be right for. All the girls in the late night flow. We made that fall. You shake that fall.
Doesn't she know that she's more that feeling? No.
That feeling, no.
Girl, don't you know that you don't have me do
on me.
Just put it on me.
Pretty little thing to love me like ya. A romantic girl. Pretty thing to love me like ya. I need a romantic girl. Pretty little thing to love me like ya. A romantic girl. Pretty thing to love me like ya.
Love me like ya.
She like the sign of that. I hate the sign of us apart, we like the sign of this. So we've been partners from the side, we've been bad ever since. I like to lose her in the dark, I think I found a kiss. I think she thinks I'm fine. I think she loves my style. I'm going to make her mine. Oh, mine. Oh, mine. Girl, don't you think I'm fine? Girl, don't you love my style? I'm going to make you mine. Oh, mine. Oh, mine. I want a romantic girl. Pretty little thing to love me like, yeah. A romantic girl. Pretty thing to love me like, yeah. I need a romantic girl.
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English to Africa service of The Voice of America in Washington. Now
Nightline Africa comes to you from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters and engineer Justin Thwaite, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, the noise of the frog will not stop the horse from drinking the water in the stream. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Yeah. Come on, baby, come and take this flight. Hey, I know I'm wrong, but I'm always right. Yeah, yeah. Mwana wa Kambi, I can change your life. Below nothing, below nothing, kosha.